Welcome to EDUCAUSE Now. I'm Jerry Bain. On this edition of EDUCAUSE Now, we'll look back at the EDUCAUSE 2010 annual conference with a collection of voices and ideas, including a conversation with Gardner Campbell and Jim Groom on the joy of learning and the current mindset of faculty in higher ed.
There is an art of cognition we're working on here. And to me, that's not optional. If you have that, many different policies can work. If you don't have that, I don't care what your syllabus looks like, you're going to have a dead class.
We also have an interview with one of the most entertaining Twitter feeds at the conference. That's EDUCAUSE Hulk.
EDUCAUSE Hulk. Enjoy EDUCAUSE very much.
And we'll review some of the ideas and voices from this year's conference. Stick around. Gardner Campbell and Jim Groom like to get together and discuss the current state of higher ed. Gardner is director of the Academy for Teaching and Learning at Baylor University, and Jim Groom is an instructional technology specialist at the University of Mary Washington. A couple of years ago, I caught the two on video debating EduPunk. And this year, I got to talk to them about the current state of higher ed faculty as it relates to students.
Gardner, one of the more general topics you bring up in your blog from your travel to Spain, I believe it was, the hope to create an online learning space that supports the joy of learning. Now, could you give us some ideas about what this might look like in reality, and more specifically, what's holding institutions back from creating those spaces?
Well, I think for a lot of institutions, when they think about how students feel, they think at a very superficial level. They think, you know, are the students happy? Do they have climbing walls? Do they have enough dances? Are we doing enough to make sure that their rooms are pretty and that they have balcony views? And, you know, those things are important in a way, I guess. But to me, they're a very superficial way of thinking about the joy of learning. So when I think about the joy of learning, I'm not thinking about these kind of creature comforts. I'm thinking about what it's like to have a mind that's fully engaged, to have interest that's awakened, to have students who, you know, would never want to miss class because that's a time when their colleagues are really a kind of self-stimulating network, the way the internet is, where somebody's got something to bring and everybody's riffing off of other people's ideas and people are getting inspired. That, to me, ought to characterize most, if not all, of the educational experience.
What you're saying sounds similar to me as saying, well, the band just needs to get this right vibe. You know what I mean? It sounds a little vague.
The idea of there being a sense of a band and a rhythm and a movement within a classroom, I think, is what probably makes Gardner classes seem different. Like, there is a sense of purpose.
Sure.
There's a sense of beyond the idea of, right, drill and kill, we got to do this stuff. Yeah, certainly things you have to read and memorize, but certain things have to feel like this class is just an example of the possibility. And the fact is, when you bring the internet of it, it's not just a dry run. It's actually happening. And it's happening in real time. And if your professor is in there with you doing it, I think it just changes the stakes for everyone involved.
And you asked a question that I get a lot. You know, what policies, what outcomes, what kind of institutional orientation? When I hear those questions, what I hear is, so Gardner, we're really excited by your enthusiasm, but how can we just kind of tack that onto what we're already doing? And the answer is, well, you can't. And you don't really want to, I don't think. There's something that I think all of us have felt at these magic educational moments that we feel so deeply. We understand this is where something has happened, and we want to be able to find that again. Now, you also ask about vague language. Vibe, feel, these are not vague terms to a musician. They may not be able to be articulated in specific words, but musicians are very keenly aware when the band is tight, when the band is not. Now, there are ways to teach that. There are ways to think about it. But it really is a matter of vibe and feel. And I would submit that those seem like vague words, but they actually name very specific states of being that artists understand. And for me, part of the joy of learning is that there is an art of cognition we're working on here. And to me, that's not optional. If you have that, many different policies can work. If you don't have that, I don't care what your syllabus looks like, you're going to have a dead class.
As the internet and online tools develop, we've seen a progression. You know, in the early days of the internet, there's the democratization of writing because you can put your stuff out there. Then we're seeing the democratization of music because anyone with a PC can make a CD now or MP3 and put it out there. And now we're seeing that with video, with YouTube, and the low-priced camcorders, flips, and things that are out there. Many of these movements decimated the traditional model of business. So what do you see happening in the future with education? If you can access all this education online, what is that going to look like? How is the industry going to be affected by this sort of democratization? Is what, that's my word. I don't know if that's the correct word, but of all this information and all this knowledge.
I think to some degree that's potentially true. You start to see new models emerging, and I don't know if these models are necessarily going to replace the old one. We have OER, we have peer-to-peer university, we have the University of Everything, we have Open University that's trying to frame out new things. And I think all that's true, but I don't think that content delivered through the web is a replacement for a relationship and for education as we've known it. I think you can do that, and you can make it cheap, and you can think of computers as a mechanism to deliver and as a transaction of delivery. But I really think at the heart of that is a neoliberal interpretation of a kind of decimation of the workforce that is academia right now. And what I think is crazy is that academics don't even realize it, and they aren't even engaging the argument that needs to happen. I mean, I heard a stat recently, and we could probably fact check this, and I probably should, but 35% of faculty in the U.S. are tenured. That means 65% are part-time, underpaid workers.
There's a really cruel irony here. In many ways, the industrial model of education has paved the way for its own demise because knowledge has been thought of as a thing that's transferred from knower to knower. We understand now, no, that's not right. Cognition is a much more delicate, complex, and interesting thing than just, I have it, I shovel it, you take it into your hopper, and we're done. Higher education has thought, well, we can actually sustain this enterprise. If the class has 500 people in it, why not 1,000? Why not 1,500? Why not 2,000 and we'll stream it live on TV outside of the lecture hall? But that's not what education is. You can't get education delivered to you. Education is an experience. What we do know is that the internet is fantastic at allowing for shared experience. We know that as a platform for communication and a place where really intimate bonds can be formed, the internet is a fantastic medium, much better than television, much better than radio, which I say with some sorrow because I love radio, much better than anything we've had, and it scales, and it can be really, really interesting the way these things are put together, but not if we think of this is a mode of delivering content. It has to be a platform for the joy of learning where relationships can be formed, can be fostered, can be encouraged. And frankly, I think if the current tenured professoriate really got their heads around the way the internet works, we'd be able to get back to our roots in a really interesting way. We would find a way in which those intimate experiences that characterize the best of learning can be propagated not just by the professor, but by the students themselves in rich kinds of contact with each other, students at one with the assignment.
Gardner Campbell and Jim Groom. You can hear more of this conversation, and there is much more, by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or subscribe to us on iTunes. I'll post the rest of the conversation later today. One of the more entertaining Twitter feeds at EDUCAUSE 2010 was that of EDUCAUSE Hulk, a superhero personality sharing his thoughts with a delightfully simple vocabulary that fit easily into Twitter's 140-character limit. I recently got to speak to EDUCAUSE Hulk and asked him if he enjoyed the EDUCAUSE conference.
EDUCAUSE Hulk, enjoy EDUCAUSE very much. Many new friends. EDUCAUSE Hulk happy.
When you were walking around EDUCAUSE, did you have trouble not breaking things?
EDUCAUSE Hulk had very much trouble not breaking things. EDUCAUSE Hulk broke easel. Sorry, we'll pay EDUCAUSE back for it.
In reality, EDUCAUSE Hulk is the voice of Michael Rakiki, Director of Computing and Network Services at Drew University. I asked Michael how the EDUCAUSE Hulk idea came about.
What happened basically was I got off the plane and I was on the shuttle bus and I pulled out my Droid and I started looking at Twitter like I often do when I have idle moments like that. And I happened to see a post from Drunk Hulk, who's a Twitter personality of sorts. And I read it, and I thought to myself, hey, no one's done EDUCAUSE Hulk as far as I know, and I looked really quickly just to make sure, and no one had. So while still on the bus, I was going ahead and creating this account. When I got to the hotel and I started doing my conference activities, I had to think, am I really going to try and run with this and see what happens with it? And kind of based that on what response I was getting, if I was getting subscribers, if people wanted to follow me. And it turned out, yeah, I was developing a little bit of a following.
Yeah, what kind of reactions did you get in the Twitter sphere? And did anybody actually pinpoint you in person and realize what you were doing?
That's a very interesting point. I guess when I first started it, I kind of wanted to keep it a secret as long as I could. I realized I couldn't keep EDUCAUSE Hulk a secret during the whole conference if I actually wanted to network. So, you know, I needed to actually kind of out myself in person to meet up with the people, you know, that EDUCAUSE Hulk was being followed by. I was interacting with these people, so I kind of wanted to know them in person as well and have them know who I really was. And I would try and interact with people always in character through the Twitter feed, because that was an important part of it, you know, to maintain this character. Also, kind of trying to be part of the dialogue, the real dialogue about educational technology and what we do at EDUCAUSE. It was a multi-layer challenge in some sense.
So were there any unexpected reactions you got from people, or are there any outcomes from this experiments that you didn't see coming?
I was actually kind of taken aback by how popular it actually was. I thought a lot of people would have dismissed it as kind of silly and pointless. I was actually pleasantly surprised that people really thought it was valuable and rewarding to have this sort of humorous facade, kind of, like you said, deconstructing what was going on at the conference in an international way. So I think people appreciated that more than I anticipated, and that was good.
Obviously, you're a director of computing and network services at Drew University, so mm-hmm. you do deal in social media quite a bit, I'm sure.
Right.
Do you feel like you have any thoughts about this in terms of the use of social media in large group experiences?
I've been thinking a lot about that. What I was able to do with this was kind of change the experience a little bit, because one, I was able to work in an alter ego instead of as myself. During the conference, I'm also posting to the EDUCAUSE 10 stream as myself and as EDUCAUSE Hulk, but I wasn't really crossing the streams. They were very separate identities, and I was very careful, again, not to react to EDUCAUSE Hulk or do things as my own Twitter account that would kind of indicate I was him until I was ready to disclose. You know, this is an opportunity that not many people could take advantage of, because it would just pollute. If we had, you know, 36 Twitter superheroes on the EDUCAUSE 10 feed, it might have been a distracting experience. So there's a limit to how much I think people could get away with this. But for me to be able to be the one to get away with it was a nice advantage. And I got to meet a lot of really interesting IT people that I might not have met otherwise.
What you're talking about makes me think about sort of the larger picture of social media, which is whether it's your Facebook or your blog account, everybody kind of has an alter ego online. It's not the real self, it's your online self. And you took that to sort of its natural conclusion. And also, you know, it's nice to have a niche. And I think the web is all about niches. When you found a little niche, and it was a really effective one.
And again, one of the best side effects is that now I've got what I would consider interesting people in the field following me, following my actual Twitter feed.
So is EDUCAUSE Hulk put away for the year, or do you still use it occasionally?
I've been trying to keep it alive. Obviously, the activity has gone way down. I figure if I attend other events, he will make an appearance at those events. You know, I'm kind of, again, thinking about what things I want to say are best delivered through that vehicle. So there will be things I post about educational psychology that probably will be best posted by EDUCAUSE Hulk. There will be some things best posted by me, and we will just keep playing that game.
Michael Rakiki, Director of Computing and Network Services at Drew University. You can find his alter ego on Twitter at EDUCAUSE_Hulk. Well, that does it for this edition of EDUCAUSE Now. If you'd like to find out more about the show, visit our show notes at www.educause.edu/now. I leave you with some of the ideas and voices that I heard at this year's annual conference. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and I'll see you in December.
It's nice to come and sort of, you know, find your tribe and realize that these are shared experiences.
The thing that's really driving cloud-type things on campus is sustainability.
Above-campus services.
When we speak of the cloud in terms of outsourcing, we're talking a lot of times software as a service. But then when people say internal cloud, it suddenly becomes my infrastructure. What is my infrastructure right. like?
I think EDUCAUSE is a wonderful opportunity. You get to meet some people that are in campuses of 1,000, over 100,000. EDUCAUSE delivers by far the best professional development opportunity for us in higher ed IT. I'm passionate about it. I know I wouldn't be prepared for the job I have today if it weren't for EDUCAUSE.
I think if people are going to look at collaboration, they have to have one of their goals of being people to get some fun out of it, as well as the work.
Collaborative culture and innovative culture are identical, but I think collaboration is necessary to have a culture of innovation.
I think the actual definition for openness is under debate. I would break these down around access, transparency, participation, and direction.
If there's going to be innovation in the technology sector, we're probably the ones who ought to know what to innovate and how to innovate, and so the staff need to be up to date.
I look forward to the annual conference as really a time of renewal, just to get away from the office and think in a different context, but also to talk with colleagues that I've never met before or that I have long-standing relationships with but don't get to see face-to-face very often. I love going to the conference sessions because I may pick up one or two nuggets out of each that is enough to help me justify being here for the entire week.
I think the reason that it also becomes even more important as far as coming together for the annual conference once a year is now the corporate partners. It's not just a matter of a customer purchasing equipment and trying to understand what's out there. In many cases, we're moving beyond that in terms of these cloud options, other strategic alliances. Those ideas are not new as far as working together for mutual benefit, but now it seems imperative.